It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I love this. There was a great commercial. The dad's running up and down the halls and or the aisles, and everything's cool, and we're all wonderful, and the kids are just standing with a blank look on their face going, back to school? Back to school? Back to school? I told you the other day, that kid in Walgreens, I can't be back to school. It's July. Well, guess what?
Guess what?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. That take you by surprise in there a little?
Yeah, I was reading
okay.
some of the stuff we're going to do, and I wasn't watching the clock.
That's
and
all right.
I thought you just asked me an idle question.
Oh,
yeah, I remember the...
We're on the air. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that'll
work. Oh, then you pointed to the on-air light and...
Hey, we're on the air.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I didn't respond in my...
Kind?
Typical...
Which would be flipping me off.
Well, that would have been silent, but frequently I also respond verbally to the questions and... Sometimes in ways that aren't appropriate for going on the air.
I would have tried. Well, I have a dump button right here, you know. I got to hit
it.
We're good. Well, welcome to a rousing edition of the Trifecta already.
Well, now that it's actually two of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before it was just
Jim. One of us. Yeah, it was uno effecta. It's the Monday edition. It is, it's nice to have you here. It's been an interesting Monday, I got to tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
Mine's been pretty darn quiet.
Mine's been interesting, but that's okay.
Share,
not bad.
Share with us.
No, that's okay.
Oh.
That's all right.
Okay.
Don't want to, and hopefully this will get rid of most of all the stuff that I've had to deal with. So, anyway, you can get in on all the fun at 382-4280 or 1-877-382-4280. And, of course, the snarky and smarmy texts are, as always, welcome at 80373. We're going to talk with Gene Clem, the... the president of the Southwest Michigan Tea Party Patriots and also the spokesperson for the Michigan Tea Party Alliance in just a few moments.
How many other Tea Party organizations are there? Is Gene's the only?
Oh, no. Far from it. They're all over the place. Yes.
Oh.
And I'm sure he would know that.
In Kalamazoo, are there other Tea Party groups?
That's a good question. I think the Southwest Michigan Tea Party Patriots...
Mm-hmm.
Take care of pretty much this area. But that's a good question. We should ask him that when we talk to him.
Yeah.
Because
when we talk about the Tea Party, and have we covered what we're going to talk to him about yet?
He has read the article, and he is ready to
I was thinking more of listeners. Have we shared with them?
Not yet, no, because we haven't started the show yet.
Oh, well, why don't we go through all the formalities, play the national anthem, and
stuff?
Start the show?
Oh, you sure?
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing to do.
And then we can do that. All right.
Okay.
I love that. The Academy Choirs. It's always fun.
Combined?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
So, Trifecta brought to you in part, by the way, by Bronson Healthcare Midwest, a new partnership between the area's leading healthcare system and the largest physician group in Southwest Michigan. Go to BronsonHealthCareMidwest.com for more details.
The call that's there racked up, that's Gene. I just forgot to type in the name. It's Monday, and I wasn't retrained.
Gene, I didn't know you spelled your first name A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Everything's silent, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Right.
All right, so before we get into the discussion about Mr. Skubik's column here on MLive, Roger had a question for you about how many Tea Party movement groups are there in Michigan.
Well, the and that's kind of a difficult number to get a firm hand on because they're all volunteer groups. But at one time we come up with about 80. There's probably 40 to 50 who are very active with monthly meetings and so on. Within the alliance, we have right now approximately 30. And about 20 of those people show up for monthly meetings, and they're across the state from southeast up to, the farthest north is Traverse City. And in the southwest Michigan, we more or less formed that as a way to facilitate setting up local tea parties back in 2009 because we were the first one that started in the southwest. And so we had a lot of contributions, and we could get T-shirts and get people started with the rallies. So we helped set up in Allegan County, Marion, Cass County, Berry County, Calhoun County, several of them. But they're all more or less independent. Most of them have their own web pages and so on now. So we're kind of holding on to. We still run a website and a couple other small things. So it's kind of served its usefulness. Put it that way.
Gene, membership, the number of groups may ebb and flow, but when one ends, quite likely people just join another group. What's the number of Tea Partiers in your mind in the state? Do you have your arms around that?
Well, I think we made a pretty good estimate that one time, and it's probably... I would say active people maybe in the range of 4,000 to 5,000. And when we were first starting up, and for instance, we've got here, we've got about 2,000 people on the email list, but they're just people who just want to kind of hang on and see what's going on. They're not really active. If you put all those together, there might be 10,000 that we could get with email. So that's probably pretty close.
Because of the article we're going to talk about, do you see the number of Tea Partiers staying steady, declining, or growing?
Well, active ones declined since last year, but we're pretty sure it's going to increase again next year during the election year. It's kind of almost the same cycle that the normal political parties go through. So it kind of ebbs and flows.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, he's answered all my questions.
Okay,
very
so
well.
Now we can talk about the article? All right. Well, okay. Let's formally introduce him again. Gene Clem is the spokesperson for the Michigan Tea Party Alliance and is the president of the Southwest Michigan Tea Party Patriots. And and also, just a heads up, Gene's going to be in studio with us on Friday. So
that's right.
As a guest host. So, all right, so you've read this article by Tim Skubik from over the weekend on MLive, and what he basically did was... kind of reported on a comparison between what's going on between you and the Republican Party to the battle between former President George H.W. Bush and Reverend Pat Robertson in the early 80s. Is that a fair comparison?
No, I don't believe so. And first of all, I know Tim pretty well. Tim's a friend of mine, but he's got this one wrong.
Okay.
So let's start with that. We've talked about that parallel. As a matter of fact, some people I have talked to early on in the what's called the Constitution Party in Michigan, it's called the Taxpayers Party, were people who were in the Republican Party that got ejected during that battle under H.W. So... and it was our desire in early discussions not to fall into that trap. So you'll find most Tea Parties are very interested in fiscal conservatism, a smaller government, a more controlled government. So things like the IRS getting out of control and NSA don't happen to you. So that's it's not one-on-one, I'll put it that way.
All right, let me ask you, and let's zero in on this, because something was mentioned in the article, was apparently a Tea Party movement effort to get Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly dumped from the GOP ticket. First of all, I guess I have to ask you, is that a real effort? And second of all, if it is, what's the reasoning behind trying to get Lieutenant Governor Kelly off the ticket?
Well, glad that you asked that, because it is it is a real effort, but the premise of the article is not correct. It's not a movement against Lieutenant Governor Kelly for specifically, but it's more a movement to strengthen the ticket in 14. And so let me give you a little background on that. In the last 2 months, I've been to almost countless Republican Lincoln Day dinners, picnics, town halls put on by GOP and by Tea Party people also about Obamacare. And I went to a seminar put on by several doctor organizations in Ann Arbor a week ago about, they called it Other Care, in other words, free market solutions to Medicaid expansion and some other things. So during all those things, I got to talk to a lot of people who are, you would call them, grassroots Republicans. Obviously, some Republicans, as we've talked before, some Republicans are Tea Party people, and some Tea Party people are Republicans, but it's not one-to-one. But just across the board, when I go to, for instance, I was at a beautiful picnic called the Pitchfork Fondue down in St. Joe County last week. And the people I normally would talk to were like, the county chair and the vice chair, and then some of the people on the executive committee down there. And I did not find one of them who thought that the governor's idea of Medicaid expansion, for instance, is a good idea. So in my mind, we've got this problem with the rank and file, what the Republicans call the grassroots, not agreeing with the titular head, which is the governor. So there's a group of people in the Tea Party, and they are specifically Tea Party people who came together and said that the governor might have a problem next year. Number one, he's going to be attacked from the left because of right to work, that still is a raw nerve, and because of the things with Medicaid expansion and the Medicaid expansion, that's right, and pushing the insurance exchanges against the will of the grassroots, is going to cause him some problems on the right. Now, some people have said that most people I can't think would do this, but some people have said that they would not vote for him. They would go fill out the ticket, and they wouldn't vote for the governor. And it doesn't make any sense to me. But there is a fear that his ticket won't have the energy unless there's a good conservative with him. So the idea being here is we can strengthen the ticket because the grassroots people will look at the whole ticket. They don't look at just the top. And if they see a good conservative there, they'll say, okay, I want that guy in. I want him with the inner circle with the governor, and so let's vote for that ticket. So that's the idea, is to actually help the governor, and our assumption is that he will be the candidate and win the primary, and we want to make sure that ticket is a successful ticket there and all the way down, the Secretary of State, the AG, right down. But one of the problems that we've seen, as I mentioned, I've been at these picnics, and especially the picnics in the last couple of weeks, the governor is driving a wedge between the elected officials and the grassroots. And what's happening is the big money hospitals have been promised all this money from the federal government if they signed on with Obamacare. Now they want, where's our money? We want our money. And the grassroots are saying, we don't want that. So the elected officials are caught right in the middle of this storm. And so the only way I can look at it is the governor purposely is driving a wedge between the grassroots people. And those are the people that knock on doors and make phone calls and are the bread and butter of your campaigns. They're not going to be too excited for campaigning for somebody who just turned their back on the party platform. The party platform is against that. We've had resolutions from districts, from county Republican parties against it. And they're going to turn their back on that. That's just not a good idea. So,
Gene, As you have probably figured out in the long time we've known each other, I'm in a different part of the political spectrum than you.
Yes, sir. I know.
Call me Captain Obvious.
Wait. That revelation deserves I mean, really?
Gene, sometimes I hear you making a distinction between Tea Party people and the Republican Party. And then just a minute later, I hear you saying you want to support the ticket, not just at the governor level, but sometimes you sound like you're estranged from the Republican Party. And then just a minute later, you sound like you're actively supporting the Republican Party. And for my simple mind, that's confusing. What's the difference between being a Republican and a Tea Party person? You said some Tea Party people are Republicans, and therefore some Republicans are Tea Party people, but there's a difference, and I'm not clear what that difference is.
That's and you're not the only one, and for a long time it was confusing to me. I finally figured out that I present myself as Republican under protest. But the biggest thing we have found right now, and as you said, we have some people who come to our Tea Party meetings. They believe in the Tea Party thing of the small government, fiscal responsibility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They don't want to have anything to do with political parties because they blame both political parties for the problem. And some people, like myself, have said, well, to make change, you have to be within the organization that does these things, and the Republican Party is one of the two that makes changes. So we decided we would go into the Republican Party and try to make changes. Further, the next thing down that we have just kind of run into is that there are many people who are used to the old way of doing things, and that's that the instructions came from the top down, and the grassroots said, okay, we're going to, this guy is going to be running the primary. We want you to support him and not this guy, and so on. Tea Party people who become Republicans don't think the same way. They think more like Democrats. I think it's from the bottom up. It's from the grassroots up. We're going to recruit people. We're going to bring people out to vote. And when we do, and we vote you into office, we expect you to at least pay attention to what we want. So we have a party platform. We expect you to follow that. And if you can't for some reason, you best tell us ahead of time to have a good reason why, or you're done the next primary. So that's kind of, but there are still the old line Republicans. There's not very many of them left, but there's still some around. It doesn't really work that way. You can't, after people elected, you can't tell them what to do. And that's not the way we see things. So there is, that's the basic difference we're seeing right now.
Okay.
Gene, really quickly, one more quick thing. As far as the effort goes, you know, the big word that Skubik mentioned was irrelevance, that Ken Sickinga said. Mm-hmm. Irrelevance. Is there a plan to try to fight that? Because since you sent Skubik's articles wrong, is there a plan afoot to prove that the Tea Party movement is indeed not irrelevant and, in fact, is something that you probably should be paid attention to?
Not specifically, other than because we had the same conversation about 3 or 4 years ago when people decided to run for precinct delegate and be elected into the Republican Party hierarchy, and that was, we knew that would take people out of the Tea Party ranks and put them into that, and that's what we're finding. For instance, here in Kalamazoo County. I was complaining because the Republican Party hasn't had a picnic for several years. So guess who's responsible for putting together the Republican Party picnic?
See, this is what happens when you volunteer.
That's right. Yeah, you're truly. So you can say, well, the Tea Party is losing effectiveness and they're irrelevant, but you're going to see a change in the Republican Party. It's not just Michigan. It's not just Kalamazoo. It's across the nation. That kind of Tea Party idea of agitation and action and boiling things up from the bottom up is being carried through local GOPs across the nation. And so that's where you'll see the strength. But it's going to be a little bit quieter. And we're not going to, we've made up our mind, we're not going to stand there and wave the Gadsden flag as much as we love that old flag with a snake on it. We're going to be raising, we're going to be raising Republican banner, because when we go to those meetings, we're Republicans. When we go to the Tea Party meetings, then we've got our crazy tri-corner hats on.
But they look cool.
Yeah, they do.
Gene, but you can see why it's so confusing for us simple-minded people on the other side. An independent group that the head of that independent group is coordinating the Republican picnic. It really gets pretty confusing for us on the other side to know who it is we're talking to.
You know, that might be a bonus.
Maybe that's the yeah. You can just make it so confusing for us, we give up.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's the plan.
Okay.
Gene, if people want information about the Tea Party movement, especially in this area, where do they go?
Best place to start is Michigan TeaPartyAlliance.org.
All right, fantastic.
And you can go right now and find everyone in the state.
Gene Clem is the spokesperson for the Michigan Tea Party Alliance, the president of the Southwest Michigan Tea Party Patriots, and he's going to be the guest host of the Trifecta on Friday. So we'll look forward to seeing you at the end of the week, sir.
You got it. We'll Thanks see for... you for Frivolous Friday.
There you go. Okay. All right. So, no, it's actually Geek Friday.
Geek Friday.
Now,
right.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's Geek Friday.
Okay.
We'll see you then. Thanks,
okay.
Gene.
Bye-bye.
All right. It's nice to have Gene pop in.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting article. Scubic's been, we're going to have to actually talk to Scubic one of these days just for GP, because we keep mentioning his articles. And he is a very well-known political commentator in the state. And
I know this is going to be a surprise. I have a differing perspective than Gene's.
I think
Scubic is right on. And the fact that Gene is coordinating the Republican Party County Picnic this year suggests an organization that, to be relevant, has to become just a part of the Republican Party. And I think we saw some proof of Scubic's being correct in Gene's comments.
Mm. All right. Well, and see, and you get to argue with him on that on Friday.
Yeah.
On or off the air. I don't really care one way or the other. It's,
we discuss.
It happens. You
Gene
discuss,
and
yes.
I really do
Actually,
not
you
argue.
You guys really do carry on some meaningful conversations on and off the air. So
yeah.
That's cool. One of these suggestions, Senior,
yes.
has been, you know, of course, the TARP situation. It started under President Bush and continued under President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people who were not in favor of that. That has reared its ugly head again. When talking about the city of Detroit. And so that's what we're going to talk about coming up. Also, just to tease a little.
Okay.
If you go around the area, you'll see sandhill cranes.
Yes.
They're very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Well, apparently there's some people down south who don't think they're, well, they think they're beautiful, but only if they're mounted on the wall.
And there's too many of them.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Who knew? Roger and Bill Schuette agree on something.
Hey!
Stay tuned for that. All that is more coming up. CBS News next, local news as well. It is the Trifecta 590 WKZL. It is the Trifecta. Roger and Jim today. Brought to you in part by Matt Mulder with Keller Williams Realty. When you're ready to buy or sell that home, make sure you turn to the real estate expert, Matt Mulder. And by Bronson, the first hospital in Kalamazoo offering the Da Vinci surgical system for minimally invasive surgery. Learn more at bronsonhealth.com/robotic-surgery. Good stuff.
Hey, that was nice of Bronson Hospital to donate the land for the new KVCC campus downtown.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, very nice. You can read that story, WKZO.com. Nice story there. Yeah, that was kind of cool. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Apparently, Marilyn Slack is not packing it in. She's starting a new initiative, and she's been there quite a while.
Yeah, and you know, it's grown by leaps and bounds under her tutelage.
And
so.
The growth continues.
Yes, it does.
A whole new campus now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Should be interesting. It's a great story. Take a look at it. At WKZO.com. Tigers off tonight. They will start a quick two-game set. I don't know what it is with the Washington Nationals, but every time they play the Nationals, it's like two games. Not three, not four, two. So they'll play tomorrow, 6:40.
And then they play Wednesday.
Yeah. Roger enjoys those Wednesday afternoon games, the getaway days.
That's what I call them.
Except for Tigers don't have a getaway day. They're going to hang around, get a day off at home.
So who's getting away? The
Nationals,
team.
Yeah, they'll get away. And then the Tigers
and
will
Roger. Begin.
And Roger, yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I don't know if you're getting away because you're going to have to come back on Thursday.
Yeah, but I got one day.
Mm, that's true. So anyway, they begin a quick two-game set with the Nationals, the Washington Nationals, this coming tomorrow, actually, at 6:40 here on 590 WKZO. And then on Wednesdays, Roger said, 12:40 your time on 590 WKZO. And then on Friday, they'll begin a weekend set with the White Sox at Comerica Park. Then they travel to Ohio to play the Indians for a four-game set. And again, Roger will enjoy the 30th, the 8th. The 8th of August, because on Thursday, the 8th, the Tigers play the Indians at 12:40.
Ah.
Or actually 1:05. Well, 12:40 your time.
Don't you just love those afternoon ball games in the sun? What a delight those are.
Yeah, you do. I get to come in and sit here. So it's, you know, just in case the game ends early or something. So that's okay. I don't mind. It's cool. So we're going to talk about, here's a new topic, Detroit bankruptcy? Yeah, hey, we haven't talked about that for a while.
Detroit's bankrupt?
Yeah, they are.
Who knew?
I was just going to say. Bob, did you know?
Haven't heard that.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's just amazing news. It really is. Bob Larson, AccuWeather meteorologist extraordinaire. Hey, Bob, I got to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is Joe Sobel a doctor?
Yes, he is.
Okay, because he keeps forgetting to say it.
Boy, if I had a PhD, I'd be... I'm all over the place.
I'm telling you. Yeah, talk to him, will you? And say, you know, because we used to hear Dr. Joe Sobel.
Yeah.
And now we just hear Joe Sobel. It's like, hey, look, you got a PhD.
Very modest man.
Does it depend on the length of the forecast?
It might.
Is he just cutting doctor out to reduce a word?
That's a good question. I don't know.
So, Bob, it was an interesting day Saturday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had wind, we had rain, we had cold, we had wind. We were debating as to whether or not we were going to create a fire pit over to Friend's house and just burn like all the branches that were on the ground to stay warm. But
yeah,
that it went by the wayside, which was a good thing, too, because it was mostly alcohol-fueled.
Bob,
but still,
even I complained about it being cold.
He wore shorts, Bob. Mm. Should have known better. Dressed like me. Long pants, long shirt. Huh?
That leads to today's word.
Oh,
not
it
the
does.
Shorts, not the apparel, but the whole topic of the cool weekend and
okay.
the cool weather that continues. The word is remarkable because it is at what would be typically the peak of the hot weather season to have a stretch like this is truly remarkable. And I want to kind of poke fun at myself with Friday's word, you may recall, was September with a question mark.
Yeah.
Yesterday's high temperature was 66, and that is the average high for October 3rd.
Oh, no.
So that September idea was just a little too conservative. I should have gone for the jugular and said October.
That'll learn you.
But unbelievable. just incredible stuff. And I'm going to guess studio thermometer now, maybe 71?
Right on the nose.
Yeah, okay, it's 67 at the airport.
So as one as our compatriot who shows up once in a while would ask, when the heck the hot weather coming back?
I don't see hot weather coming back at any point in the next week to 10 days.
Wow. And please explain why this is.
Now, when I say that, I don't mean to imply that it's going to be 70 for the next 10 days in a row or 68 for the next 10 days. What I'm saying is I don't see it being 90 at any point in the next 10 days.
Okay.
I don't see hot weather coming in the next 10 days. It will get warmer than it is now. And, in fact, as soon as Wednesday, we're probably back to 80.
Oh,
two days from now. That's still below average. Average is 83.
My complaint is about the dew point.
That'll start to come up as well, although they never get really, you know, muggy. Although coming off this real cool weather, it might actually feel that way.
Yeah.
We've kind of been conditioned to the cool weather.
So,
We're going to, starting with tomorrow, it'll begin to warm up. As we'll have more of the way of sun, less wind, and upper 70s. Probably at the station, it could hit 80 as soon as tomorrow. But I think at the airport, officially waits till Wednesday.
Yeah, it does kind of get a little warmer here for some stupid reason. I'm not
quite
sure why.
Wednesday is their next chance of rain.
Okay.
next frontal system comes through, kind of linking with the storm system going by to our south. A lot of rain with that feature going by to our south. Heavy rain right now into western Missouri. That'll be moving into St. Louis later tonight across southern Illinois into Kentucky and those areas tomorrow and whatnot. We're not expecting that. Well, we are expecting a couple of showers, maybe a thunderstorm Wednesday. And then, lo and behold, it dries out, but turns on the cool side again for the second half of the week. Not as cool as what we just had this weekend, but certainly below normal again. And maybe a third front that could keep it cooler than normal comes through about Saturday. At least for the next week to 10 days, I don't see truly hot weather in the offing.
Bob, this is a heads up for a Geek Friday question.
Okay.
I was reading an article over the weekend that was talking about weather at the North Pole, and it said if the stratosphere is warm, that holds the cold air at the pole. If the stratosphere is cold, the cold air leaks out and comes south. And I'm wondering if you could explain that to me in simple little words that I would understand.
We'll try, except I'm not sure. There's different levels of, you're talking about surface temperature. Well, we're talking about the stratosphere. Yeah, okay. Because there's all different levels of the atmosphere. And actually, and it also depends on what time of year it is. We'll talk about this Friday.
Okay.
But actually, it's the opposite. Stratospheric warming in the wintertime. Double check that stratospheric warming in the wintertime allows cold air to blast south. Not, you talked about when it's cold in the stratosphere, it blasts south. Actually, the other way around in the winter time. I'm not sure about overall for year round.
Well, that's what this was referring to, because it showed cold air coming right down over the Great Lakes.
I see.
And maybe I do have it backwards. See, Bob, that's why we depend on you.
Okay. we'll touch on that again on Friday.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah, because that is Geek Day.
And also, real quick before I go, Tropical Storm Flossie in the Pacific is going to be moving across the Hawaiian Islands this evening and tomorrow. Still a tropical storm. It is weakening. By the time it crosses the islands, it should no longer be a tropical storm, but rain and wind with that feature across the islands.
Surfers are happy.
Yeah.
Boy,
how uncommon is that, Bob?
It is. It's the first tropical system to have a direct impact on them since 1992.
Wow. That is a long time.
So it is very uncommon.
You know, given the fact that it's, a seven-island archipelago and that's got a target on it?
Right. And it's just because it's where it is, and the storms usually don't make it out that way. They usually are east of there, and then they die before getting to them because of a cooler pocket of Pacific Ocean. And sometimes they form, and they often form west of there and turn into typhoons in the western Pacific. But they're an area that's typically protected. The last one in 1992 was Hurricane Niki.
Yes, I remember that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, a semi-geek moment on
a
Monday.
Yes.
I love it.
Thanks, Bob.
On
You're
that
welcome.
Note, we'll end. Thanks, sir.
Mm-hmm.
All right, bye-bye. All right. We got a geek moment on a Monday.
Always like talking to Bob.
Bob is cool.
Yeah.
Bob is cool. This is going to be a real quick topic only because I'm not sure. There's a whole lot of controversy surrounding it because most people are going to say no. But there's the claim is, and this is in the Detroit Free Press over the weekend, the claim is that Detroit problems could be solved by getting TARP money and diverting some of the auto bailout money to them, to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Meet the Press host David Gregory posed this question to our governor earlier this month. 80 plus million or billion would it be flowing to the auto companies. Isn't there not some money somewhere available that could help Detroit out of its $18 billion deficit? Well, here's the thing. If the government sold its GM shares that it has right now, the taxpayers would be on the hook for about $11 billion. They would lose that much. So they're going to have to wait for GM stock to go up and up and up and up a little bit before they even actually get the return on the investment that they might want. And this is the comment that I have thought probably weighs in more. Okay, they're talking about cities around the country, San Jose, Chicago, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Portland, and more, that are facing underfunding of pensions.
Mm-hmm.
If you bail Detroit out, okay, do you not believe that those cities will come in hat in hand and say, well, you did it for Detroit? And then that puts the, you know, the United States government not just necessarily in the auto business, but in the pension refunding business. And where does it end?
But as Mitt Romney said so eloquently one time, corporations are people, my friend. And why can't we treat all people alike? Why does the person that is the General Motors Corporation get preferential treatment over, say, a person who spent 30 years as a police officer in the city of Detroit and is now living on a fixed income, and according to Kevin with a Y, they want to pay 10 cents on the dollar on pensions. So that means if you have a $1,800 a month pension, it's about to go to $180. If we're so concerned about that person that is General Motors, why can't we be considerate of other people?
And again,
like the pensioners who are going to go hungry with this approach.
And again, I will pose the question, do you really want to set the precedent of having the United States government bail out a municipality?
On the other hand, I think the conservatives want to set a precedent here that underfunded pension plans can just go away, and then corporations will have license to make sure their pensions are underfunded
and
the money can go away.
And I will tell you that in a topic we're going to talk about after the 4 o'clock hour, I believe the Attorney General of Michigan agrees with you.
I believe
he does. All right. So we'll end up talking more about this coming up next hour. I thought it was an interesting, because it brings up that point again, does the government really want to get involved in this? Sand Hill Cranes. We're going to talk about that next. It is the Trifecta. 590 WKZO, it is the Trifecta, brought to you in part by Bronson Healthcare Midwest, a new partnership between the area's leading healthcare system and the largest physician group in Southwest Michigan. Go to BronsonHealthcareMidwest.com. to learn more. It is the Trifecta. It's Roger and Jim today. Now, I know for a fact that out at one of our station's transmitter sites, there actually are sandhill cranes, because I think I asked you about it.
Uh-huh.
And you said yes. It's a marshy area, so there are some. They're very, very beautiful birds.
Yeah. I've got a pair that live in a wetland near my house.
Yes.
See them walking and the chicks through. I have ponds both east and west from me, mm-hmm. and they go back and forth. The horses in the field just watch them walk through.
Yeah.
And,
very nice.
Yeah, they're becoming more commonly seen here. Back in the 1930s, we almost hunted them to extinction.
This is true.
And it's their comeback is slow. Their numbers are nowhere near what they once were. But here in Michigan, they're making a good comeback.
So, given that, in a southern state, Tennessee to be exact,
yeah,
the Tennessee Fish and Wildlife Commission is going to be voting on a proposal that would possibly allow hunters to shoot them this fall. 60-day crane hunting season, 775 permits, so they could each shoot three, and that would a potential 2,325 cranes. Now, you said something, because you're our bird expert. They pretty much don't nest, nor do they mate, anything like that in Tennessee. They basically fly over.
Well, some of them do, because some of the sandhills go all the way to Florida.
Okay.
Some go down to Georgia. There are some that stay in Tennessee, and if it's a protracted cold period, they too will move south once stuff starts freezing up in Tennessee. But if they have a relatively warm winter, I'm certain some of them stay there. But they all come back north. Well, now I take that back. There are some sandhills in Florida that stay there year-round and do, in fact, breed in Florida. but the ones in Tennessee come back up here to breed. There is no breeding that takes place in Tennessee, nor even mating. That all takes place once they come back to Michigan and Wisconsin.
So let me ask you quickly before we have to go to a break here. Is this something that probably is a no-brainer because of the simple fact that they are such a tourist-attracting bird that despite the fact that their numbers have increased, that this actually could put a real dent not only in the population and could start up the effort to getting rid of them again, but also kill off tourism, if you'll pardon the expression?
This is a case where hunting advocacy groups are way ahead of the science.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem with wolf hunting. We don't know what the population of wolves in the UP should be. We don't know where the natural equilibrium of their population is. Even in the UP, the last couple of years, their numbers have declined. Well, we don't know where that decline is going. We don't have the science. And yet, gun groups want to rush ahead and start shooting. And here we have the oldest species on the face of the planet, one that we almost successfully pushed to extinction 70, 80 years ago. They're now just beginning to make a comeback, and we don't have any science to support hunting isn't going to have a negative impact on an endangered species.
And just so you know, and Roger will correlate this, sometimes whooping cranes can be mistaken for sandhill cranes.
Yeah.
And a hunter, if he can't differentiate and shoots a whooping crane, they are endangered, by the way, the immature ones, whooping crane, isn't it still an endangered species?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you shoot a whooping crane thinking it's a sandhill crane, not only are you going to lessen the population, but that's a federal offense.
Well, and they mix together.
Yeah, they do.
When we see whooping crane in Michigan, they're always with sandhill crane.
Mm-hmm.
So other birds will mix in with their group.
Not a good idea. That doesn't sound like this is really well thought out. Well, anyway, if you want to comment on this, even though you're in Michigan, twra.comment@tn.gov. So there's your opportunity to. This sounds like an idea that's. It almost sounds like Ted Nugent came up with it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Fire away. What the heck? Let's have some fun.
And he's going to have a recipe in his Kill It and Grill It cookbook for how to spit roast sandhill cranes.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk about Detroit and public pensions again after 4 o'clock, so you ready your phone calls. It is the trifecta. 590 WKZO CBS Local News are next.